listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good evening, everybody. This is Jill Trammell filling in for Michael Cutler this evening on the Border Talk. Mike is in South Carolina at the Tea Party Coalition Convention, and he's sorry he can't be with us today, but has asked me to fill in like I often do. We want to give him a plug and find his website at michaelcutler.net, and he also does a TV show at talkborder.com and also for AND Magazine, AND Magazine. Mike is a senior fellow for Californians for Population Stabilization, and their website is capsweb.org. We'll miss him tonight, but I have a nice interview today for you with Stephanie Scruggs, the executive director of the 912 Project. The 912 Project was started by Glenn Beck, back trying to bring America together in a non-political way to bring back patriotism, the type of patriotism that we felt right after 9/11. So with me tonight is Stephanie Scruggs, the executive director. Stephanie, are you with us?
I'm here.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, thanks for coming on.
Oh, no problem. I need to clarify something so that nobody spanks me, and that would be a bad spank, by the way. I'm actually the national co-chair of the 912 Project,
which is
non-political. That's okay. But I'm the executive director of 912 PAC, which is the political end of the spectrum for 912ers. And we focus on legislation, and of course, right now we're focusing on our Second Amendment rights.
Well, good. Well, then that's what I basically was bringing you on to talk about tonight and also to learn a little bit more about what kind of events are going on around the country that you've been involved with and other networks that you've been talking with. How we can talk politics on this show. Michael's show actually being about the border issues, it's an American issue. It's not necessarily a political issue. It's everybody's issue. And
right.
I think in today's environment, our Second Amendment rights is also a nonpartisan issue. It's an American issue. So,
absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about what you guys are trying to do to help protect our Second Amendment rights.
Well, and this really does delve into politics, as a lot of listeners know that there's a lot of talk about an assault weapons ban. The assault weapons ban that is currently being proposed as part of the Feinstein bill, the latest Feinstein bill, she writes a new one every year. But this one's actually being taken seriously. The disturbing thing about this is this particular bill goes so much further in its breadth and reach than the bill that was passed in the 90s. What we are seeing is that this would do a number of things. It doesn't just outlaw AR-15s and things of that nature. It's also taking out squirrel guns. I mean, 22s that have a long mag on it, or a 22, even if it only holds a handful of rounds, if it has a pistol grip on it, that would be outlawed. So, you know, my neighbor's kid's squirrel gun is going to be outlawed because it's an assault rifle. The other thing it does, too, though, is the way they have it worded, it will actually ban 75% of the handguns on the market today.
Wow.
So we're not talking about a double-stacked FMP that holds 16 rounds. We're talking about your average 9mm that you'd pick up over at Sports Academy for personal protection. So what we are working to do at the 912 PAC is to educate people about exactly what's in this bill and get them to call the congressmen and stand up for their rights, because we're going to lose them. The other thing that's interesting about this particular bill is the old bill, it had a grandfather clause. In other words, you could keep your weapon, you just couldn't find parts for it. That is in this bill as well. However, the difference is every person must register those. So if you have what is classified as one of these weapons, if you have one, you have to register for it for the government. And when you die, you have to turn it over to the government for destruction. You cannot will it to your children. You cannot sell it to any other individual. Should you ever decide to get rid of the gun whatsoever, it has to go to the government for destruction.
Right. Sort of sounds like what exactly what they did in the UK. And
exactly.
Yeah, and we know how well that turned out. And the first time they had rioting and the store owners couldn't protect themselves, they started thinking twice about, oh, gee, maybe we ought to fought to keep our rights. And we're exactly at that place right now in America. And I know those folks that are concerned about border issues that listen to this show, a lot of those mm-hmm. folks live along our borders, and our borders are immense. Michael has been instrumental in teaching the public that our borders are not just Mexico. I mean, our borders are surround us. And,
absolutely.
We look at Israel, and they're constantly fighting everybody outside of their border. Well, how would they do that without any arms? We'd be in the same situation. And I know 912, you guys are really very good about getting information out to the public about Agenda 21. And now I know that's different than what you're the arm of 912 organization that you're working. But tell us a little bit more about Agenda 21, just for the general audience, because I think that's something that's been very much censored in the mainstream media.
Agenda 21 is the United Nations agenda for the 21st century. It was actually first written down in Rio. It's also sometimes known as the Rio Accord back in the early 90s. And everything I'm going to tell you sounds absolutely insane, but if you go to the United Nations own website, all of this is in writing.
Yes, you can also find it on the 912project.com website. They've got good information there for you as well. Okay,
so
tell me the craziest thing that the UN thinks that this 21st agenda is going to bring on for this new world. It's really a new world order.
It absolutely is, and I know that sounds like I wear a tinfoil hat, but there are so many crazy things, I can't even name the first one. So I'll just start reciting a list. Number one, the Agenda 21 treaty outright states that it's seeking a massive reduction in world population. And when I say massive, I mean by billions of people. Because, according to this treaty, we human beings are pretty much a scourge upon the earth. We're harming it. So there need to be less human beings. Fun. Okay. That's kind of crazy. But that's what these people wrote into the treaty. Another thing that is quite disturbing is the end of private land ownership. And that is deeply disturbing here in America. You would not own the land your house sits on. It had belonged to the government. So you would live on that property at the government's leisure. Now, the reason they're doing that is because there is actually a map, and you can find this on Google. If you Google the Agenda 21 biodiversity map, you will find a map of the United States that's in red and orange. What this map does is it shows where they want the population to live in the United States. Now, they have this for the entire globe, but the U.S. is the major focus of Agenda 21 because they really want to control us. What they want to do is they are going to create bio-corridors where humans are, and it, honest to God says this right in the treaty, humans will not be allowed to live there, and they'll only be able to use it sparingly and with the United Nations permission. So if you live in rural Iowa, say, they've decided you don't need to live there anymore. They will move you to what they call, quote, high population density centers. Basically, they want the people to move out of the country, out of the suburbs, they really don't like suburbs, and into high rises in the city. So you will see places like Chicago grow larger and with more high rises, because they want people off of the land in the natural areas.
Mm-hmm. And that makes a lot of sense. It does, but it makes a lot of sense when you think about the folks that are getting behind some of our major nonprofits that are, let's just say, the World Wildlife Fund and some others that are primarily taking money in just to buy land and to fight anybody who wants to do anything on that land. I mean, they literally want to keep it pristine, but it's for more than one reason in a lot of different situations, especially when we start talking about oil, and the price and things of that nature. But tell me a little bit, if you can, about Vision 2035. Do you know much about Vision 2035?
You know, I am not the expert in that area, so
that's okay.
I'd be hard pressed to like about it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the one thing that we can't do is overwhelm the listeners with Agenda 21 issues tonight. But I think let's go back then to say the Small Arms Treaty. When the Small Arms Treaty came up in the UN, we know that you know, Hillary Clinton was the first to hop on the Small Arms Treaty train.
Right.
And I had, you know, I had longtime Special Forces guys tell me, oh, Jill, you know, don't worry about it. It's not ever going to happen. The Senate's going to have to vote on it before it would ever be enacted. And, you know, oh, the UN will never occupy the U.S., so you don't have to worry about it. I think we're now seeing that it's a much larger agenda. And
it most certainly is.
It is. What do you think could happen if the, well, obviously the UN Small Arms Treaty is going to be, they are going to find a way to make the U.S. a part of it. And if it happens, what would your prediction be on how it would affect us in the U.S.?
How it would affect us? Or
yeah.
what do I think will happen?
Right.
Well, immediately, if you think it's tough to find ammo right now, just wait.
Yeah.
The Small Arms Treaty, I researched this fairly extensively, it puts the United Nations will create its own global committee who will decide who is allowed to produce ammunition, what kind, what type, and how much ammunition they'll be allowed to produce, and where they can ship it and sell it. So if they decide America's really got enough ammunition, us crazy gun lovers, they'll just cut off the flow.
Right.
And it won't be allowed to produce.
Right.
The same thing with the guns. And, you know, I had some folks initially who really thought I was going over the edge saying that the United Nations is trying to, that they hate guns and they want to take them all away. And people would argue with me until I pointed out the great big fat statue that stands outside the United Nations building in Manhattan. And again, if you go look it up on the internet, just put United Nations statue in New York City, and what you will see is a giant statue of a pistol with the barrel tied in a knot. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't tell you what the United Nations agenda truly is with guns, not just quote-unquote big scary Rambo rifles, but the 357 that your wife keeps at home to protect herself when you're gone, that ought to tell you everything you need to know.
Yeah. It's true. I think Americans are needing to open their eyes and start to educate their neighbors on some of these things because, you know, a lot of the folks that are on the right side of the aisle are aware of it. We talk about it. You know, we try to argue with liberals about the different components of Agenda 21. And ultimately, they don't ever seem to circle back to logic. So it gets very difficult that then you have a giant statue of a gun with the barrel tied in a knot. If that doesn't ring clear as to what their agenda is, I don't know what does. And then let me talk about with you about the ammunition. We know now, since we've obviously got our administration is on a full-blown rampage to find ways to shut down gun manufacturers and ammo manufacturers, and they're doing it in all kinds of ways. Patriot Promotions works specifically in the military, veteran, and profession of arms communities as my niche market. And what I've been experiencing is, even before the horrible Sandy Hook shootings, we have been running out of ammo. Everybody should remember when Homeland Security bought up tons and tons of ammo, and then people were asking them, why'd you buy this ammo? And they didn't have a good answer. In fact, they literally mocked us and said they were stocking up for the zombie apocalypse. Okay? That was their answer. What they're doing is they are trying to buy up all the ammo. Now, not only are they doing that, but they are also shutting down and bringing in foreign investors to control the brass plants that we have now.
Okay.
So brass manufacturing is a huge thing because if everybody, you know, people should know, to make a new bullet, you need brass. You can make a once fired bullet, but eventually that bullet becomes useless. You have to then, you know, melt the brass and take the different components out, and it's a whole long process. What we need are more brass manufacturing plants, and right now we literally only have speckle, like a handful of them around the country, and we're losing operation on some of those. Additionally,
absolutely,
they're starting to try to put all kinds of tariffs, and they want to literally shut down the importation of ammunition from other countries and the importation of guns from other countries.
Mm-hmm.
Not only are they doing, while they're working on that, at the same time, I know just recently I've had at least two different folks come to me that are gun manufacturers in the last week who said, one in particular said, I have been getting my lowers for my ARs that I make. Then this is a person who makes them for the military, the ATF, and civilian use.
Uh-huh.
My lowers have been coming from a Boeing milling plant. Boeing has just told me that they will no longer make any more lowers for ARs.
Wow.
Now, the scary part is this. If the plants stop making the lowers, the uppers you can get all day long because they're unregulated, but the lowers have to be regulated through the ATF. They already have that law in place. So now, in order for him to find a new manufacturer, he has to wait minimally a four-month waiting, like it takes at least 4 months for him to even get approval to find a new manufacturer.
Oh, wow.
So you think about this. They shut down all the lowers, everyone who's manufacturing lowers, and everybody's going and overloading those manufacturing companies who will still make them. We will continually have a waiting period for any type of guns. And it's they put us in a holding pattern is what they do. They put you in a holding pattern. So literally everything that's out there right now, people better go buy it because they're not going to be able to get it eventually. It's going to be, we're going to run out of ammo and we're going to run out of our automatic rifles.
Well, and another thing with the ammo that people have forgotten within the first, I forget the exact amount of time, but it was right around the first year, 18 months of this administration's first term, one of the very first things they did is they stopped the military, the U.S. military, from selling its used brass so that it could be recycled and reloaded.
Yep.
And it made absolutely no sense because it was actually more profitable for the military to sell that used brass to the reloading companies, and the companies that cleaned it up and sold it or reloaded it, was more profitable for them to do that than it was for them to crush it and sell it for the metal weight of the brass. Yet that's exactly what they did, and those were the standing orders to the military. You clean up the ranges, the brass gets crushed, and you get rid of it. It no longer goes to those manufacturers. People have forgotten that as well. Because even right now, you can't find, like you were saying, whether it's from a production or, you know, recycled brass, whatever the case is, you can't even find brass right now, let alone bullets, or let alone the ammunition.
Right, right. I've got a caller on hold. Let me bring in our caller. Hi there. This is Jill. You're on with Jill and Stephanie. Who's this? Hello? Oh, we lost our caller.
Hello?
Oh, no. Here she is. Are you there? All right. Well, we lost that one. Let's try this one. Hi, you're on with Jill and Stephanie. Who's this?
Hello?
Hello?
Can anybody hear me?
We can hear you. Who's this?
Here you are.
Hi, this is Debbie Ringhaver.
Can I announce you? This is Debbie Ringhaver, one of my favorite gun girls in the whole wide world.
Yay! Hey, Debbie.
Hi, how are you doing tonight?
Good, good. I think we have the other caller on as well. Who else is with us? Trey, is that you? Nope. Gosh, my board is lighting up, and I'm only one here tonight, so you're going to have to excuse me for having to call in, but this is what we do on Blog Radio. Well, Debbie, tell us, you're a gun girl as well. You know, here is a bunch of women. We're cackling, as most men would say, about all these gun issues. But you know what? I think it's very indicative of the fastest growing population in the shooting sports. and the fastest growing population of gun owners are women right now. And tell me why you are concerned about the U.S. Small Arms Treaty and the situation with guns in America right now.
Well, you know, as somebody who grew up around guns and has always been taught gun safety and the lethal nature of weapons and so forth, and somebody who just loves the fun of guns, I also understand that in view of what our government has been doing over the last, oh my goodness, I'd say 30 years, it's clear to me that they don't hold themselves accountable to the Constitution. And so that Second Amendment right is essential for protecting all of our other liberties. Mm-hmm. And we have got to train everyone as a sovereign citizen to use their guns, know how to use them, be comfortable with them, have the expertise at arms, so that once our government has completely run amok, which we're not far from it right now, we'll be able to defend those Second Amendment rights, or that Second Amendment right.
Absolutely.
And all the rest of the rights, you know, I mean, without the Second Amendment, all the rest of the rights are gone. I mean, we can't protect them. We are toothless.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I think people are starting to understand a little bit more about what our founding fathers meant when they established our constitutional rights. And I do believe that most people are concerned about protecting our Second Amendment rights. Their biggest problem right now is that they're conflicted with what they hear and see in the media and how the few, the evil few, are dictating to all of us what we can and cannot have. And I'm not meaning evil in regards to politicians, but evil folks such as the shooters from the recent tragedies. There's always going to be outlaws. Outlaws will always have guns. You know, we look at the map that was posted of gun owners that are living next to non-gun owners. You know, that's literally like putting a sign out in your front yard to, if there's a ban on guns, to come rob me to get my guns, number one, which is what happens in England all the time. Or if you don't have guns in your house, then, hey, come rape and rob me. It's just ridiculous that people think that these things are, I mean, that's private information. It should not be public information. But the bigger the government gets, it seems like the more they want to know.
If we all carried guns, it would be a moot point.
Exactly.
In Switzerland, where they're required to carry guns, you know, everybody's got a gun in their house. There's not much mystery there. I'd like to see everybody be required to carry a sidearm. I mean, just personally, I think that, you know, people would say that I'm an outlier in that belief. I think that here's a little anecdote that every time I think about this, it's so funny. We have my husband gave me for my birthday 1 year a wobble trap, and it's a sheep. A skeet shooting apparatus, and you can go out and they pull, and it will shoot these clay, you know, fire the clay targets out at variable random directions, and you practice your shotgun skills with it, your bird shooting skills. You play pigeon, and so one of my sons, or my son, had one of his friends come down and stay at our house, and we were all going to go down. It's something that we want to do on the weekend on a Saturday morning. We'll all get up and get our guns and our ammo, and we'll go out to our farm and we'll shoot. And so my husband looked over at this friend of Holton's and said, you know, would you like to go down with us and shoot? And he looked at Charlie and he said, well, Mr. Lane, I'm not very violent. And Charlie looked at him very puzzled and said, well, we don't shoot each other. And I think it's a mindset. People are indoctrinated to think that people who use guns are violent. And typically, I would say that people who use guns are the least violent.
Right.
They are the people that understand the lethal nature of a firearm. They understand that it is absolutely a tool of last resort. Mm-hmm. And people who are not familiar with firearms, or who get their experience through a video game, for example, they really have no understanding of what it is they do. And I think that it's because we're not required to shoot our food any longer. We don't hunt. We're not really hunters. I mean, there are people that hunt and eat what they hunt, but we don't. I mean, any of us can go, you know, down to the grocery store and pick up our protein. We don't have to go out and hunt it. Mm-hmm. And I think that because we are not required on a day-to-day basis to be familiar and expert with a gun or a firearm or a bow and arrow even, we have gotten away from the mentality that this is a tool that must be used with reverence and respect, and that taking a life is not something that's done lightly, whether it is, for food or in protection of your family or your life, you know.
Absolutely.
And so,
guns are used for last resort, but so many people are so unfamiliar with them, or they've been indoctrinated by basically our culture, the death culture that's out there that's being propagated through the media and so many other ways, the video games and such, that they believe it's used for assault, that they are assault weapons, not defense weapons, which in fact is what they are when they are on American soil. We have a caller. Caller, will you tell us your name and do you have a question?
Hey, Carol. So this is Chuck Smith. Pleasure to hear you guys tonight. I just tuned in to you. I've got a show starting here in just a few minutes, a little bit teethier than yours. But it was really great to hear two ladies talking about the Second Amendment, shooting weapons, and how it's just a normal part of our society, mm-hmm. and how we've all been dumbed down. Americans, not we all, I'm a veteran, but most Americans have been dumbed down to the point where, like that gentleman said to your husband, I'm not that violent. What do you mean violent?
Yeah.
It's a tool.
Right.
Am I violent because I use a hammer, a saw, mm-hmm. you know, whatever? It's a tool.
Right. Yeah, actually, more people are killed by bats in America than by actual handguns, if you can believe that, by tools such as bats or batons and blunt objects. More people are killed that way than they are by violent handgun crime. So,
well, check out the stats. Check out the stats on how many women prevent rape by a handgun every year.
Right. Right. Did we hear? We didn't hear anything about the person 2 days after the shooting, Sandy Hook shooting. There was a guy that went in the mall and was actually stopped by a civilian with concealed carry, and that literally prevented from another massacre from taking place. And prior to that, there were, you know, school resource officers who have stopped mass shootings in schools. But do we ever hear about that on the media? We don't.
Well, it doesn't fit their narrative. They're not going to talk about it.
Right, right. Well, Chuck, I appreciate your service to your country. You're a veteran. What branch were you in?
Army. Airborne Army. Ranger. Thank you very much.
You're right.
I just wanted to call in. I've got a show. I've got to get back on Blog Talk. I've got I've got a political website and all kinds of stuff that I do.
Give us a plug, Chuck. Where do we find you?
Oh, smithfix.com.
All right. Hey,
Got a show starting in about 3 minutes that test again. It's been a while since I've been on Blog Talk and been real busy trying to consolidate. I'm a prepper. And my show is primarily prepping and, you know, what do we do now? Everybody knows where we are and how we got here. All right, now what do we do?
You know what?
That's what I'm looking for answers.
Let me give a plug as well that you might like, Chuck. You're a veteran. I'm putting on a Warrior Appreciation event during the week of SHOT Show in Vegas next week. And we've got a website you will love. Spread it around. It's www.uspsa.com. You will find several different firearm packages with automatic rifles, pistols, and such, all kinds of accessories. $10 a piece for raffle tickets. We've got over $30,000 in equipment up for $10 a piece in our raffle tickets. Go check it out.
Wait a minute, darling. Can I buy an automatic or a semi-automatic?
Right. You can buy both.
It's great now, girl. You say automatic. Okay. That's a
as
totally
long as it's
different
a defense
animal.
Weapon, okay?
Yeah. Hey, great show, and I'll shout at you guys when I got a little bit more time. I just happened to catch you when I was playing around here a minute. I love your show. It's great to hear two ladies talking Second Amendment.
Oh, hey, thanks so much. Have a good one.
Thank you.
You too. Bye.
You know,
bye.
You guys raise a great point with why is no one talking about the other things that are used to commit murder. And as Deborah Ringhaver so eloquently stated, it does not fit their narrative. We have all often joked that, well, next thing you know, they're going to ban hammers and baseball bats.
Right.
But in the British Journal of Medicine, just a couple of weeks ago, the association, the Doctors Association there in Britain, just made a formal recommendation. I kid you not, this is all over the papers in Great Britain, just made a formal recommendation that Britain outlaw butcher knives.
No, seriously?
Seriously. Large, pointy-end butcher knives. And they're using the exact same tactics and data and crazy statistics that they use against guns here. They're citing how many emergency room visits because people are stabbed with long, pointy butcher knives.
Yeah.
And how much it costs their health care system and what a burden it is upon the taxpaying British citizen and how many pounds a year it costs. They want all knives to not have a pointy end on them anymore. So you're either going to have a butter knife with a little bit of an edge on it to cut your steak, but no pointy end, or you're going to have a meat cleaver. But I imagine they will probably wind up recommending you outlaw meat cleavers too because, well, I've chopped up a chicken before and I can tell you a meat cleaver can do a hell of a lot more damage than a butcher knife.
Yeah.
But it's insane. There is no end. Oh, it might hurt you.
Yeah.
Let's ban it for everyone's own good.
Yeah. I mean, that's just ridiculous. I mean, and then they're going to require those who have meat cleavers and sharp knives to have a license for them. And then people are going to be breaking into their homes to get their knives. I mean, it's just, it's absolutely like, where does it stop? People have got to pull their heads out and understand that you give an inch, they're going to take a mile. And that's exactly what they're
absolutely
trying to do. You know, I'm hoping that we'll have a caller on here shortly who experienced firsthand issues with his credit card company. You know, this is how they're going to get people. They're going to make it just really difficult, but you know, we are also a group, just like Chuck that was just on, you know, a ranger who is not going to be intimidated. We are not going to be silenced, and we are not going to be intimidated. And now people should realize the women are rising, okay? When the women rise
really
up.
It really is the reason for the little TV show we have in pre-production called At Home on the Range.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about women and guns and girls who love guns, gun-loving girls, and all the things that go along with make having guns fun. Because, in my opinion, it will be incumbent upon us when they come for the gun and they wind up taking our men, the women will have to be there to protect the young ones and the elderly. And we will have to be proficient with guns in order to save those that can't save themselves.
Right. Well, you know, and we're not going to do real well if all we have to defend ourselves are, you know, revolvers and 22s. That's not going to fend off anybody. And, you know, I think those in the city that are rounded up and put in a FEMA camps, okay, call me conspiracy crazy, but why do we continue to fund these things to be built around our country and not say anything about them? You know, why do we allow executive orders, hundreds of them, to be passed, which include, you know, several months of control of food, water, you know, basic resources. Why is it the very first executive order that was passed when he was reelected was the ability for Homeland Security to have more control or a better relationship is how it was written with our local police departments. You know, Stephanie and I have talked about this in the past. Stephanie, let's mm-hmm. educate the public on who is the supreme authority when the feds or let's just say the ICE agents are coming into your local police station, and you know everybody knows because they watch CSI and they watch all these TV shows. They know when the feds come in, they usually have authority over the locals. Who has
it's
the
actually,
supreme authority over all of them?
It
the
is
county,
your county
sheriff.
Sheriff.
Thank
That's
you,
right, Debbie Lane.
Yep.
And some folks think that this is a conspiracy theory, and I was accused today of supporting a kind of a radical group when I published this that I was rehashing their meme, but there's actually a Supreme Court documentation on this in 1993. Sheriff Mack actually originally filed the case, and it was Mack versus the United States. It did change names after that, but the Supremes agreed with Sheriff Mack. He is the highest elected official in that county, and if the sheriff decides that the feds aren't going to do something in his county, he can do that. The sheriff can prevent, I don't care if it's ICE, I don't care if it's the ATF, whatever federal agent tries to come in, if the sheriff doesn't like what he's doing, he doesn't have to let them do it in their county. Furthermore, he can handcuff them and hold them until they are removed by whoever their supervisor is outside the county.
Mm-hmm. Now, this
so
is
it
really
is very important to educate your sheriff, because there are a number of sheriffs that don't know about this.
Right. Tell me a little bit about the story we were talking about the other day with the sheriff in Florida, what he did with creating the militia.
This is so cool. I'm waiting on the documentation for this, but when the last assault weapons ban went through, a couple of the counties in Northwest Florida, which Northwest Florida, if you haven't been here, we're a bunch of good old boys, and we really like our Bibles and our guns. Thank you very much. We ain't giving them up for nobody. And it has a long history of that. And so when the last assault weapons ban went through, the sheriffs of these two neighboring counties, Santa Rosa and Escambia, got together with the county commissioners and passed a new thing, which automatically makes every citizen of these counties part of the county, the official county militia. Well, as a militia member, an official government entity militia member, the theory was is you're allowed to have an assault weapon to protect your county in this time of crisis, just like state militias. Most people, when they hear militia, they think of like the Michigan militia, Timothy McVeigh. Those are separate, but they're different. What most people don't understand is that almost every state does have on the books a state militia. This is different than the National Guard. They answer directly to the governor, but they cannot be deployed overseas like the National Guard is. They are literally there for a time of emergency or crisis at the governor of that state's behalf. And many of those states have a tradition of doing arms training for those state militias. And this dates back. It's usually in the South because, you know, they had to use tanks like that about 100 and some years ago. Just saying. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, it's a tradition that's lasted. Many governors don't know about it. But these two county commissions just took it one step further and said, we need our own few militias. And that's how they protected their citizens, in theory at least. It was never tested in court. But in theory, that's how they worked to ensure that their citizens would be allowed to keep the weapons that good old Bill Clinton tried to take away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's important that people do start talking about these sort of things and getting this kind of information to their sheriffs if they don't already understand the power that they have at their fingertips, and being very serious about electing our local officials, because one person, I mean, if you think about it, one person is not a whole lot to corrupt. So that person has to be carefully selected. And when we're talking about Second Amendment issues, which protect all others, we need to start looking at who is in our local county. It's act locally and affect globally right now.
Right. And there it's surprising, Jill, how many sheriffs across the United States are kind of buying in to laying down their executive power, you know, their power as the highest executive officer in a county. I was shocked. I went to a sheriff's convention in Daytona. I guess it was about a year and a half or so ago. But anyway, I was really surprised to see how kind of blissfully ignorant these were about their responsibility to the
mm-hmm.
Constitution
mm-hmm.
and their unwillingness to stand up and say, I took this oath. And I take it seriously, and I'm standing by it. I was shocked by that. And so it's, if there are people out there listening that are interested in that, they could go to Sheriff Richard Mack's website, where they have a constitutional sheriff program there. And they have a really wonderful website about the Constitution and, you know, all different kinds of information that's very useful, and ways to find out if your sheriff in your area is in fact one of those sheriffs that will honor his oath
Right.
It's very interesting.
Right. And to take that information to your sheriff and let him know, you know, this is out there. I think some of the time they may not even understand what's at their fingertips. I know living down in South Florida for some time, I spoke with the sheriff while they were up for reelection. I spoke with all the different candidates, and I was really shocked to find out that they didn't even understand why people were having a hard time building gun ranges in our area. They really didn't know what the holdup was, and it wasn't necessarily a political thing, but in fact it was. It was on a level that they didn't really want to deal with. However, people in that particular area of Florida have to travel an hour just to get to a gun range. So, yeah, I mean, it's just silly. So sheriffs need to be educated on what they can do to help the local population, you know, be there to protect the county when stuff does go bad. Because if it's all up to, if we're going to rely on a police state at some point in time, there needs to be other folks that have networked ahead of time that can help counteract that in one way or the other. And we really do need to rely on our sheriff. And when we look at the border issues, which this show is normally all about, those sheriffs, they are the ultimate authority at the border. And I believe we're going to see a lot of activity coming over the borders at a collective time, like collectively, on all borders, on all border sides at some point in time. And those sheriffs are going to need to be prepared. And those citizens, those militias that should already be preparing, need to understand that it might be a situation where the borders are where the terrorists are going to enter. I don't know. There's all kinds of talk about Fast and Furious, what that was about. And I think we'll see in days to come different strange things happening, which we have already started seeing. And not saying that it's a conspiracy theory, but people should start opening their eyes to the fact that some of these things are just too coincidental. And if a sheriff can take supreme authority, like Sheriff Joe is a good example. You know, he's taking the authority and he's running with it. And guess what? He keeps getting reelected. And he pushes it to the extreme. So American people are tired of being feeling hopeless and helpless in how they can control the government. The government has become so difficult to deal with on both sides of the aisle that nobody feels like they make a difference. Well, you know what? Let's get behind our local sheriffs and help them make a difference.
Absolutely.
Well, Deb, before we go, too, and I want to talk a little bit both about you, both your organizations again. Deb Lane, tell me a little bit more about Freedom in America Network and your project here with women and Home on the Range.
Well, Freedom in America Network is just a little startup. These are actually activists who got so disgusted by the coverage that we're getting from the establishment media that they decided to go out and buy cameras and equipment and to just go out and become citizen reporters and journalists and to talk about their areas of expertise and interest. We have everything from veteran, we've got Karen and Billy Vaughn are going to have a show. They have an organization called For Our Son. We've got people like Karen Schoen, who's an expert on Agenda 21, Roger Gagetano, who's an expert on Sharia and the creeping Islamic threat. We have just a wide, wide variety of people that are interested in reporting and disseminating information on all kinds of things that the establishment media has studiously ignored and really does not want to share with us. And so that's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to get these people who are so passionate together to really go out. I mean, these people are on a shoestring, but they've got skin in the game. They're buying their own equipment. They're doing it all their own. This is not NPR. We are not subsidized by the federal government, also known as the taxpayer. We're not subsidized by George Soros. We are doing this out of our own pockets for the good of our fellow citizens. And my little show will be 30 minutes, and I am in my RV right now, which will be kind of my roaming studio. I'm going to go from range to range to range all over the United States. And
get people, women particularly, that's who I'm targeting, because I know men love guns, but really and truly, there's just nothing better than a girl that loves a gun, I have to say. And I'm on my way. I had talked to Stephanie just a few minutes before the show. I was telling her that I was in Monroe, Louisiana, where they shoot Duck Dynasty, and I had gone into the place, the plant there where they build all the calls and do all the stuff. It was a lot of fun, and that, those are the kinds of things that spring from your love of loving a gun. But I will be going, making trips, interesting trips like that, all over the United States. We're on our way to the SHOT Show now, as you know, Jill, and we'll be arriving out there just in time for your big event, and I'm going to buy all the raffle tickets I can lay my hands on. So,
well, you got to get them. You got to get them before Wednesday. We shut down the raffle. It's all an online raffle through the U.S. Practical Shooting Association, USPSA.com. It's right there on the homepage. So we stop that at Wednesday at basically 4:30, and we literally tally up all the money and we present the nonprofits, and they're all veteran charities or law enforcement officer memorial fund, and we present them with money right there on the spot on the January 17th at the Warrior Appreciation Night at the Del Toro. And
we are very excited to be included and to be able to attend, and so I'm really looking forward to that.
I'm excited you're gonna be able to film too. So where can we? Are you gonna have it on? Is this all gonna go online pretty soon, or are you waiting for?
Well, there, the Freedom in America Network has had a soft launch. It's up. You can see little snippets of stuff that's in the can. There will eventually be live streaming. These people that are getting out and videotaping and filming and streaming live and having live shows. Some of it, like Dr. Alan Keyes, was going to be a big contributor to our network, and he's got so many thousands of hours of stuff that we can put that all up there, and people can see that now. But it will just be growing. It's, as I said, it's a mom and pop venture. We don't have a large funder or sugar daddy, so to speak. So we're just doing it along as we can. If people are interested, if they have ideas, they have content, we invite them and encourage them. If they've got information that they feel needs to be shared, please contact us. And you can contact me at Debbie, D-E-B-I, at freedominamerica.us. I am the executive director, and I am the one responsible for finding people to actually come on the network. So if people out there have something that they feel needs to be brought to the attention of the public, and they know that the establishment media is going to ignore them and will not give them a fair hearing, come to us. We'd be happy, more than happy, to give you a fair hearing. So,
well, that's great. And, we're going to put you together with the folks from VSPAN and VSPAN.com, VSPAN.org, which is also another nonprofit with similar, more of a nonpartisan, veteran and military-oriented network out of Chicago, which has the endorsement by the American Legion. So I look forward to bringing all of you together in Vegas and making those introductions. And I think that's what Patriot Promotions is known for. I'm the networking ninja. But I do it for all the right reasons that you two ladies have come across my path. And so when we connect the dots, we just make that power grid a little bit brighter. And I hope our listeners out there look up freedominamerica.us. Check out VSPAN. It's like C-SPAN, but with a V for veteran. VSPAN, VSPAN.com, and take a look at what we're doing for veterans there and for patriots in general. And Steph, tell me where we can find you and the 912 PAC.
You can find us at PAC912.com. That's PAC912.com. Pretty easy.
Yeah. Well, ladies, I am blessed and privileged to know both of you, and thank you so much for spending your evening with me on the Michael Cutler Show.
Thanks for having us.
I look forward to seeing you in Vegas next week.
Vegas, baby.
So
and what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, unless the camera's
absolutely
rolling, right?
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me. Good to talk with you guys.
Great to talk to you, too. You guys have a great evening. I'm going to sign off with the Michael Cutler Show. I don't like to wear out my welcome here, but just try to bring in the best information possible. Again, Michael is out with the South Carolina Tea Party Coalition Convention, and we're proud of him for going on the road and educating the public about border issues. He will also, you can find him at michaelcutler.net, and he does a TV show at talkborder.com, and for AND Magazine, that's A-N-D Magazine. Remember, he's a senior fellow at Californians for Population Stabilization, but that's not the Agenda 21 kind, and their website is capsweb.org. Again, thanks for joining us tonight on the Michael Cutler Show, and we look forward to filling in for him again in the future. Have a wonderful evening. You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.